Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal, Ozil. Marca Mesut Ozil. Llegó el gol de Olivier Giroud, marca el Arsenal, marca Olivier Giroud, gol de los Gunners.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there, welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always with James from Gunnerblog. Good morning to you, goodly morning indeed, I should say.
Yeah, goodly morning. How are you doing? I'm all right.
I'm okay. You're in a noisy location this morning. If people can just take in this background hum, let's give them a moment. There.
It's like, I don't know what it is. It's like I'm working on an alien spaceship.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just constantly reverberating behind me. But prime suspect is a fridge, but if that is coming from the fridge, then the fridge better take off or do something interesting soon.
Maybe there are, it's like a cryogenic fridge, deep freeze, bodies in the freezer, you know.
Well, this isn't my house, so you are freaking me out. I mean, anything could happen, to be honest. I'm looking at this fridge now, expecting all sorts. Maybe it's a transformer just waiting. It's lurking, and then when I turn my back, arms and legs will unfurl from its doors.
Yeah.
Start a war with me and some aliens. I haven't seen Transformers, but I imagine that's what happens.
I think I saw the first one. It wasn't very good. It was just lots of robots going around going, smash! And that's kind of it.
But what wasn't good about it?
It's a good question.
Yeah. How's your weekend been?
It's been okay. A bit quiet, obviously, because I've been sick this week.
Yes, so. Ever so sick.
Yeah, but people who listen to the Arscast on Friday and now listen to this Arscast Extra will hear the big difference in my voice. So I'm definitely on the mend. And what's interesting is over the last couple of days, I've felt like eating food again, which is nice because I spend the best part of 5 or 6 days just going at the idea of any kind of food. So I had an Indian takeaway on Saturday night. It was delicious.
You must be feeling quite a lot better to take that on.
That's absolutely. I said, fuck it, I'll go all in.
That's it.
You know, if this, it's either going to cure me or kill me. And it seems to have. Well, I'm here.
You're still here, which is impressive. And the Indian takeaway sort of didn't push you over the edge. So congratulations.
Thanks very much.
Are you having that feeling where you're so much more appreciative of your health having been a bit ill?
Yeah, because it's been the second time in a couple of weeks, actually. So I was, over the course of the week, getting very tired of not feeling well. And then now I feel I'm in this strange place where I feel I should do everything to make myself feel as well as I can all the time.
Okay.
Does that make any sense? So you think about, well, will I have, you know, go out and have 4 beers tonight? No, I couldn't do that. That might make me feel not well, not like not ill, but not as well as I could be. I should go out and I should do exercise and I should release endorphins and I should eat more healthily. I should do all these kind of things where I feel like I need to embrace my wellness. I'm sure that will all go by the wayside in a couple of weeks or a few days even.
Yeah.
But you do miss feeling just well, don't you?
Yeah, you do. But, you know, it makes you more appreciative for the finer things, like not, I don't know, constantly being sick or whatever it might be.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe we need that touch of perspective in our lives.
Exactly. It's yin and yang, guys.
It is. So, look, you got to your first game of the season.
Mm.
Yeah. How was that? Exciting. I saw your very excited-looking Instagram picture from outside the ground. I don't know how anybody could have mistaken what you were thinking in that picture. It certainly didn't look like feigned indifference. It was just pure excitement.
There you go. I mean, genuine joy emanating from me. No, I was very excited, actually. I think quite a lot of people were, you know, heading into the ground and chatting to a couple of fans, things like that. I think there was quite a lot of buzz going into the game because you know, we had especially once the starting lineups came out, but because we had our two new signings in the starting 11.
Yeah.
And if you can't get excited about that, then, you know, I don't know what you can get excited about, really. So it was there was
robots.
A good atmosphere. Robots, transformers.
yeah, fridges.
Robot fridges.
Yeah.
I was very, very excited to be there. What is that? Is that only the second home game? It is, isn't it?
It is, yeah, because there was the Liverpool one, then obviously we were away to Leicester and Watford.
Leicester and Watford, indeed, yeah.
Leicester and Watford.
All the glamorous locations.
Yes, indeed, getting them out of the way nice and early. What did you make of? Let's start with the two new signings. Lucas Perez got the nod up front, which I was a little bit surprised by.
I was too, yeah.
A little bit, to be perfectly honest. Like, I was happy to see it, but a little bit surprised by it.
Did you think he'd go for Giroud?
I did, yeah, yeah. I sort of figured he had an eye on tomorrow night's Champions League game. Obviously, I think that played a part in his team selection and obviously the international duty as well, that players were coming back in various stages. But I thought he would probably go with Giroud. I think he'll go with Giroud tomorrow night, but I thought he'd go with Giroud on Saturday as well. So, look, he gave him a run out, and I guess maybe he looked at the game, looked at the opposition, the fact we're at home, and thought, okay, well, look, I can give him a good hour here to have a look and see what the Premier League is like, to settle in and what have you. But I won't say the game passed him by, but I think he found it a bit difficult. And that was, I guess, as much to do with our own performance as his individual performance.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think, you know, he wasn't helped by a team display that wasn't the most cohesive. I mean, what I thought was interesting about the starting 11 generally is that if you look at the last game against Watford, for me, it was kind of the victory was built on three good partnerships, and they were between Koscielny and Holding at the back, Xhaka and Cazorla midfield, and then Ozil and Alexis in attack. Mm. And actually, in this match, we broke up each of those pairings. Now, for some good reasons, there wasn't any continuity, you know, from the previous game, and I felt like that showed in our play. Add in the fact that there's been an international break, the players have been all away, you know, there's never that same cohesiveness when we cut the first game after an international break. So that led to quite a disjointed team display. And as the centre forward, you're the person looking to profit the most from what the rest of the team does. So it's no surprise, really, that he didn't enjoy a huge amount of opportunities to show what he can do. I think he had one blocked shot when he played that sort of, you know, 1-2 with Ozil.
Yeah.
Aside from that, I don't think he had an attempt on goal in the game.
No. And again, you know, it was down to the overall team performance, I think. We really did struggle to create until maybe the last 20, 25 minutes when Alexis came on, and things looked a bit different when he came on. I mean, I would have liked to have seen him with Alexis, obviously, and with Mesut Ozil. But yeah, look, the manager says he's going to need some time, and I think that's pretty reasonable. I don't think the way that Southampton played in the second half, they sat very deep, like almost immediately when the second half began. They sat very deep and looked to hit us on the counter attack because they brought Shane Long on, who is, as we know, really, really annoying. And they were looking to use his powers of being really, really annoying to disturb us. So, again, as we got on top, the opportunity for him to show the qualities that he has weren't really there because there wasn't an awful lot of space for him to use. And I think that's where we'll see the best of him, I think, is when we can get him in behind defences and when we do have somebody pulling strings from perhaps a little deeper in the midfield. So you're looking at a Granit Xhaka being able to pass those balls over the top towards him or towards Walcott, et cetera, et cetera. So,
yeah. I think Xhaka is a player who'd benefit him, and I think you're right. I think Alexis is another who would. I mean, one thing you notice about Lucas is that he likes to press quite high. He's happy to do that, to chase defenders down. Alexis loves doing that as well. I think them doing that in tandem could be very effective, as we've seen with Alexis combining with Danny Welbeck a couple of times in the past. Another thing I'd say about Lucas is that I was impressed in some respects. He was probably a bit stronger, a bit more physical than I was expecting him to be, even though Arsene Wenger intimated he was slightly surprised by the physicality of the English game. And also, in his defence, according to the manager, he's still a bit short of fitness. Only one game played for Deportivo prior to the move, so yeah, might take a bit of time to get up to speed.
I think that was actually a really good point. You know, he only played one game for Deportivo, then wasn't playing because they knew he was going to move. Mustafi as well has only just come back after an injury and played, what, 45 minutes mm-hmm. for Valencia. So we're looking at two new guys settling into a new club, new teammates, new country, as difficult and easy as that is in certain respects. But we're also looking at two guys who are probably a little bit behind in terms of their match fitness. Mm-hmm. So I think it's right to give them a bit more, a bit of leeway, certainly, and give them more playing time, and then we can make better judgments on how they're doing and how they're settling in. Mustafi alongside Koscielny, I thought he did pretty well, to be perfectly honest. There were a couple of moments where I thought he was maybe trying to force it a little bit with his passing in the first half that didn't quite work out. But I think in general, he looked pretty okay. Bearing in mind, of course, that there were some very good opportunities for Southampton in that second half.
Yeah, I thought he did all right. I thought like Lucas, he looked a little bit nervy in some respects. Some of his passing, particularly in the first half, was a little bit shonky. But you know,
shonky.
Is that a word?
I don't know.
I'm going to have it.
Shonky.
Even if it isn't.
What's the definition of shonky? Let's tease this one out.
I think it's light shonky. I think it's like, well, I think it could also be a verb, like, oh, I've shonked it.
Oh, to shonk.
Yeah. So it's sort of shonky. In my head, it's like you're hitting something and it doesn't go quite straight. It sort of skews off to the side. Shanked, I think, is probably the actual word.
Yeah.
But shonky has a sort of clumsier sound to it.
It does, yeah.
There's a kind of onomatopoeia going on.
Yeah, that pass was a bit shonky there, yeah. So it sort of clubs it a bit over to the right and out for a throw.
That's exactly what I'm picturing in my head.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
Which is maybe because that's what Mustafi did, I think, on one occasion. But he's clearly very capable. He was keen to bring the ball out of the defence, wasn't he, and try and sort of instigate things from the back. He's obviously got that to his game, I think. A couple of times he probably overcomplicated it and probably didn't have quite enough support from the central midfield. But he was fine. And I think probably unlike Lucas, he'll probably stay in the side for Tuesday. And hopefully this 90 minutes will have done him some good.
Yeah. Okay, so reasonable debuts. Nothing groundbreaking, but far too early to make any real judgments on them. But interesting to see how they're going to fit into the side. What did you make of the team that he picked in general? You said you understood some of the decisions, breaking up some of the partnerships. I think Mustafi comes in for holding.
Sure.
Coquelin came in for Granit Xhaka. I mean, was that a decision based purely on Xhaka's international commitments, the fact that he's been away and playing for them and is still a player, perhaps feeling his way back from a summer tournament? Or do you think he was looking as well at tomorrow night against PSG? He wants to use Xhaka there and figured, look, a home game, I can use Coquelin and Cazorla because it's something that's worked for me in the past.
I mean, you have to think that PSG was looming large in his thoughts, although, I mean, there is a kind of alternative reading where Xhaka, you know, has a few times now not started with Coquelin ahead, hasn't he? So maybe Arsene, maybe he's easing him in, maybe he's a bit loath to let go of the Coquelin-Cazorla partnership. I was a bit surprised, and I'll say disappointed, to see Xhaka not playing, because I thought, from what I've seen of the Watford game, he was really integral to our performance there.
Yeah.
His understanding with Cazorla looked like a particularly interesting one. I thought if any player, I know Xhaka's been off, you know, doing international duty and getting sent off and what have you. But I wondered if, given Santi's age, I wondered if it might be him who missed out on this game, because I didn't know if he'd be able to play 90 minutes Saturday against Southampton and then again against PSG on Tuesday. So I was a little bit surprised by that partnership. And I think if I was expecting to see a player in there, I think I might have expected to see Mohamed Elneny ahead of Francis Coquelin. But Elneny, can't really get a look in right now because we've got so much depth at central midfield, hence the Jack Wilshere decision. So I guess I felt like this was a team pick with Tuesday in mind, wasn't it? I mean, obviously you've got players been on international duty, Xhaka, Giroud, Alexis, but had we not had the PSG game on Tuesday, I suspect they still would have started.
Yeah. Wow, it's noisy there. Okay, so yeah, I have to say with regard to Xhaka, I think we missed him in terms of what he brought to the team against Watford. And I think if it is to do with PSG and if it is to do with international duties, it's just a bit of a shame that we couldn't maintain that little bit of continuity in the team selection just to see how it might work again. So it'll be very interesting to see what he does tomorrow night, what sort of team he's going to pick tomorrow night, what sort of midfield he's going to pick. Like, can Cazorla do another 90 minutes so soon after playing, the full game against Southampton? Like, yeah. Is he going to be the one who makes way a little bit? Will it be a different kind of partnership? Could we see Elneny and Xhaka perhaps away from home against PSG? So maybe that might be something he's thinking of. And I guess when it's going to be a matter of time, or we're going to have to wait and see what he does in certain games and certain circumstances before we can try and second guess him to a certain extent, that maybe he does have plans to use his midfield in different ways throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I hadn't considered the idea that Cazorla might not play. I mean, basically, if I'm picking an Arsenal team, it's generally got Santi Cazorla in it. So I hadn't considered that possibility. But Elneny and Xhaka, that's an intriguing idea, isn't it? I mean, especially away from home, against the PSG side with plenty of attacking ability, you do wonder if maybe they'll go for someone with Elneny's energy to provide some cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
All right, so look, we went behind to Tadic free kick. I thought they were very, very lucky to get that free kick. It was a dive, complete dive. Was it Nathan Redmond?
I think it was Redmond, yeah.
Yeah.
Monreal slid in.
Yeah, Monreal took a little bit of a swipe, but Redmond jumped up in the air and made a meal of it. So they were a bit lucky to get that free kick, and I think the booking for Monreal was pretty harsh as well in that regard. Petr Cech, unlucky, could have done better. What's your...
I mean, when it first went in, I had that sort of sinking feeling of, oh God, any shot of Petr Cech from outside the box, it kind of feels like it's a goal sometimes.
Yeah.
But when you look at it, I mean, he did make a decent enough save, and then I guess you're unlucky if it comes off the woodwork and hits you and goes in. I mean, one way around that bad luck is to obviously tip it over the bar or around the post, but
yeah.
Given that he wasn't able to do that, it's quite unfortunate that it then bounced off his back and rolled over the line. But at that stage, when the goal went in, my excitement about the game evaporated rather swiftly because our performance was not up to scratch, really. And when they got that goal, it didn't obviously seem that there was a way back into the game for us, to be frank.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it did feel a little bit like, oh God, here we go again. And the type of goal that we conceded, there was an element of bad luck to it, but again, there's this part of you that thinks, oh God, fucking free kicks, we tend to concede quite a lot of those. Yeah, I don't really know that he could have done an awful lot more. He was talking about it afterwards, and he's saying, look, the wall is there to protect half the goal. People said he might have been a little bit too far over to the left, but the wall is there to protect that half of the goal, and then because it's so close to goal, the dude could have just fucking leathered it down the side where the keeper was if he'd been standing a little bit further to the right. So it was a very, very well taken free kick, and I think the player got a bit of luck to it. But
if you're a player, you're probably furious that goes down to an own goal, aren't you? If you're the guy who's taking the free kick.
Yeah.
you want the credit for that, really.
Yeah. Exactly. But tough shit. Put it in the goal. Keeper got a touch and got unlucky. So it is definitely an own goal. So no credit to Tadic whatsoever for that one, apart from the quality of the initial free kick, which was nearly brilliant. I don't think you can call it brilliant if it doesn't go in. So
there you go. Sorry, Dusan.
Dusan?
Is that his name?
I don't know. It's a bit of a shonky name, isn't it?
If it's not his name, then that's probably just offensive, my sort of guess at it. No, yeah. That is his name. Thank God.
All right. So look, you're looking for a response, and I think Theo Walcott had a header that went over from a corner. You go, well, fuck.
I think he got two headers from corners in the course of the game. I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Yeah. So he was doing his bit, but you're looking going, okay, well, where's the goal coming from? And then all of a sudden, from another corner, Coquelin jumped in the air. I think it hit him on the back. Lucas Perez kept it alive. And then Lauren Koscielny, oof, overhead kick. I mean, what a brilliant finish.
Oh, absolutely amazing. I mean, and I suppose the greatest compliment you can pay is that it wasn't entirely surprising, because Koscielny loves a goal and has brilliant technical ability. I mean, even so, to see a centre-back half doing that, it's very, very impressive. Brilliantly taken, and I mean, Arsene Wenger probably wouldn't care to say it, but it's a kind of a captain's contribution, isn't it? I mean, when Arsenal desperately needed something, he pulled something pretty special out of the bag.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Lead by example, captain's goal, 100%. I mean, brilliant technique. That's his 21st goal for Arsenal, which is, he's into his seventh season now.
It's a good few more than, I don't know, I can think of a couple of outfield players who probably would like that tally. The one thing about the goal, I thought, I don't know if you thought this, but I've thought the same watching Diego Costa for Chelsea at the weekend. I'm confused. I'm delighted that these goals are permitted, but I feel like a season or two ago, these were getting, hauled up left, right and centre by refereeing dangerous play or high foot. And when the goal went in, there was a little bit of me sort of with my heart in my mouth thinking, are they going to blow here? But maybe there's a bit more leniency on those now. What do you reckon to that?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose there is the whole high foot thing and dangerous play, but I guess the technique and skill has got to come out on top.
Mm.
If for the good of the game, as if I give a fuck about that, but
for the good of Arsenal this weekend,
yeah, for the good of us. But I think that's what you would prefer to see, that that player gets the benefit of the doubt, where perhaps if there is contact or if there is a foul, if the guy kicks a defender in the head on the way through, then the referee has to make a decision. But, it's up to the defender to put his head in the place where it might get kicked. And that's, Koscielny's been on the other end of that as well, obviously. He's a brave player. I don't think there was anything particularly dangerous, or there was no Southampton player putting his head near where Koscielny was kicking the ball. So, tough shit. I didn't see the Costa goal. Was it an overhead kick?
It was an overhead kick, yeah. It was an overhead kick.
Well, I think his should have been
disallowed. Yeah,
it should have been disallowed.
I agree, especially as it was a late equaliser for Chelsea. I think that should factor in too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he probably should have been sent off as well.
I think his other goal should have been disallowed. I mean, it wasn't an overhead kick, but I still think it should have been disallowed.
I think he should be disallowed.
Retrospectively disallowed.
Yeah, from life.
From history.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be good.
So look, yeah, brilliant equaliser. And second half, I think Arsenal were pretty much on top.
Mm. But there was always the looming threat of Shane Long.
The looming threat of Shane Long, who was, in fairness to him, absolutely fucking shite.
I know. When he came on at half-time, I don't know if there was an injury to Jay Rodriguez or if Southampton just decided to unleash Shane Long, but there was part of me going, oh, God. You're absolutely right. He's an incredibly annoying player to play against, and I'll never quite forget that Boxing Day game where we made Shane Long look very good indeed. And I feared him. I feared him on the counter-attack, but I needn't have feared him because his finishing was, fortunately, diabolical.
Yeah, it really was terrible. I mean, he had three really good chances. There was one where he was clean through and he clipped the ball, 5 or 6 yards wide, at least. That was one where I was going, oh, God, fuck. A little bit worrying that the defence was opened up like that, I think you have to say. There was another one where there was a tap-in from someone else had a shot, Cech made a save.
And Cech got back and cleared it with his foot.
Got back up, yeah. It seemed he was like a big ent falling up off the forest, getting up off the forest floor. Yeah. And just managed to get a foot to it. But again, I think, had Shane Long's finishing been any good, that would have been a goal. And then I think I could be right here. He had a header from a corner, a pretty much a free header, which he headed over. So we gave him three really good chances to score. And to be fair, he would normally take one of those against us. So it was delightful to see him miss those. It was also delightful to see him get fouled, very, very obviously fouled by Nacho Monreal down by our left-hand corner flag. Monreal stood on his boot, stood on his heel, and Long went down and was waiting for the free kick to be given. It wasn't given. Arsenal played on, which was marvellous. We played on and left the fucker on the ground, as we should do every time an opposition player is injured. Oh,
the fridge has stopped trying to take off. Well, I mean, I can't explain this magic.
Wow, let's go back to the start and just record it again.
I'll remember what I said.
Yeah, but no, I mean, I think it was great, and I'm glad to see that. And I also like the fact we played on even when Koscielny was down injured.
Well, we benefited from both, you know.
Yes, a bit of a... I suppose the referee could have put the kibosh on the Koscielny one because it was a head injury. Maybe he didn't know it was a head injury.
Yeah.
Koscielny's down, clutching his face, having been kicked right in the eye or just below the eye. It looked very, very painful indeed. But we, you know, we kept going, got the ball into the box, and then there was a tug on Giroud's shirt by what's his name? Font.
Jesse Font, was it?
Jesse Font, yeah.
That's a very good point, actually. If the referee had been doing his job, should he not have stopped the game when Koscielny went down?
Yeah, I guess. He must have not known that it was a head injury, because it kind of happened in a fairly crowded space. It was only the camera behind the goal that allowed you to see that Koscielny got a kick in the head. So maybe the referee and the linesman didn't see that and just thought, well, maybe he's twisted his ankle or whatever it is. And obviously allowed play to go on. I think otherwise they would have stopped that, and then we wouldn't have got the penalty. So did you think it was a penalty?
I have to say, first time I saw it live, I was convinced that it was. First couple of replays I saw, it was two. But there's been so much debate about it. I've been a little bit surprised almost that it's been quite as divisive as it was. In the press room afterwards, I can tell you that the general opinion that I seem to gather was that it was not a penalty, and Arsene Wenger was kind of challenged on it in his press conference. What was your interpretation? I think my issue is that when I first saw it, I could clearly see Font pulling the shirt of Giroud.
Yeah.
And I was like, right, pen. But then from another angle that I later saw, Giroud's kind of pushing him with his other hat. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of, there's a little bit of back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely a shirt pull. There's no question about that. By the letter of the law, is that a penalty? I suppose the referee has decided that yes, it is. I think it's a little bit generous, but, you know, I'm not going to complain about it, or I'm not going to say we didn't deserve it or anything like that, because I'm enjoying the fact that we're actually getting penalties this season. How many did we have? I think we'd won last season, something like that. Very few anyway. And some of them were so obviously penalties that weren't given, you're like, what the fuck is going on here? And now we're getting penalties for all kinds of things, and I'm enjoying that part of it. So, look, you've got to put yourself in the position. I think that's what Giroud can do. He makes life difficult for the central defenders. He does get his shirt pulled a lot, Giroud. Like, he really does. So whether that's the attention that he also pays to defenders by getting close to them or trying to get in front of the ball, maybe that's, you know, a little quality that he has, the ability to have his shirt being pulled. I don't know, but it does happen to him a lot. I don't think he gets anywhere near the amount of penalties that he should. But we've had a few down the years where it's because of a defender pulling out a Giroud, and that was the case. So looked very welcome to me.
Yeah, well, look, perhaps this will instigate a bit of a change because, you know, the Premier League are trying to crack down on this issue, aren't they? I mean, particularly at set pieces, but the old shirt pulling.
Yeah.
If Giroud is a regular victim of that, we might reap the dividends penalties.
Yeah, I suppose the other thing you'd say, though, is that we have to be prepared for that to work the other way.
Well, that's it, and I'm sure it will sooner rather than later.
Yeah, for sure. Because it's so ubiquitous, it's just what players do in the penalty area. So, I think it is as good as it is to get them from our side. I think we're going to have to be prepared for the reverse to be true as well at some point. But look, pressure penalty, Southampton players were kicking at the penalty spot. I don't know if you noticed that.
I didn't notice it live, but I've since seen, was it Virgil van Dijk who was the
I think so, candidate. Yeah.
I mean, that's... and it was a long wait as well because Koscielny was receiving treatment for some time. So Santi had plenty of time not only for the penalty spot to be made all shonky, but also to consider his decision about where he's going to put that spot kick.
Yeah, Yeah. Straight down the middle, more or less.
Turns out. That's his favourite. I mean, what's going on there? I was watching that thinking, is he waiting and then waiting for the goalkeeper to move and then putting it just slightly to one side? Is he gambling? What's your interpretation of his technique there?
I think he's gambling a little bit, to be perfectly honest. He's banking on the goalkeeper going one way. I mean, what you would say is, like, if the keeper had gone the other way, would he have been in a position to save it with his feet?
Yeah, I think if the keeper had gone the other way, he probably would have saved it because it wasn't quite central.
Yeah.
Or high enough, perhaps, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's a good penalty or a bad penalty. I mean, I suppose a good penalty is a penalty that hits the net,
yeah,
right?
It's gone in, so it's a good penalty. But yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, there are ways of taking a penalty that make it pretty much impossible for a goalkeeper to get to it, regardless of whether they go the right way or not. Mm. You know, I'm a fan of penalties that hit the roof of the net, for example. You think of how Robin van Persie used to take them with the power that he took them with. Keeper could go the right way all day, it would make no difference.
Yeah.
Or if you're going to go into the side netting, if you're going to go right into the corner, it becomes very, very difficult for the goalkeeper to stop them there as well. So, if it were me taking a penalty, you've got to have some fucking massive balls to go straight down the middle. Like, you really do, because if it doesn't work, you just look like a cunt.
Have you ever seen that? I'm not sure I've ever seen a player go down the middle, a goalkeeper just stand still and just catch it. Can you imagine?
I'm sure there have been. Maybe Henri took one and keeper got it? I can't remember. Maybe I'm mixing it up with a game of FIFA. I don't really remember. You think of some of the tricklers down. I mean, the classic one is Lauren. Versus Spurs, if you remember, a good few years ago. And he like, whatever about Cazorla's one against Southampton on Saturday, he hit that with some power. But Lawrence was just like, I'll trickle this down the middle. Ball took about 5 seconds to get over the line. Casey Keller scrambling back going, no!
Yeah, goalie could have dived, got up and tried to dive again, probably.
So look, he did say afterwards he'll have to think about whether he's going to put the next one down the middle or not. But, you know, maybe that gives a goalkeeper something to think about now when he's facing a Cazorla penalty. Is he going to do it down the middle? Will I just stand still? And for Cazorla, maybe if he goes left or right, then that makes it an easier job for him. So.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I guess goalkeepers, it's generally binary, isn't it? Am I going to go left? Am I going to go right? With Cazorla, they've now got this third option to consider of just standing where they were. So, I mean, look, all very, very pleased to see us getting awarded penalties. I'm very pleased to see Santi on the score sheet. I think he's already got more goals this season than he did last.
Well, there you go. There you go.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, so good. So three very welcome points, not the most convincing performance. But I think, you know, there are mitigating circumstances. I think there are reasons to be a little bit concerned, but also reasons why things could easily get better as we prepare to play PSG tomorrow night. So what else caught your eye in the Premier League over the course of the weekend? The Manchester Derby, did you watch that?
Oh, I did watch that. It was a very entertaining game.
Yeah.
Interested to see, obviously, I mean, Pep versus Mourinho, Claudio Bravo, I thought, you know, had an interesting debut.
That was hilarious.
I mean, it couldn't really have gone much worse for him, but I suppose that he did get with a win at the end of the day, so they got away with it. I think Man City look very good, I have to say. They look like they're going to be extremely difficult to stop this season. In terms of the players they have, the depth they have, the manager they have, the confidence that they're playing with. I don't think they're watertight defensively, but especially with Bravo playing like that. But they look like they're going to be a real challenge to face, don't you
think? Yeah, I do. And I did enjoy in this new climate of players being booked for dissent, as we saw with Santi Cazorla, actually, on Saturday. Mm-hmm. He just had a little bit of a gesture at a decision that I think the decision went against Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, and Santi reacted and picked up a booking. Based on that, I did enjoy Wayne Rooney telling the referee to fuck off.
Yeah.
That sounds...
Sorry, one second, that's the dogs. I'm just putting... There you go.
That's it.
They're out. There they go.
Dave the dog.
Dave the dog and Doreen, his sister.
Oh.
Yeah, there they are. But they've been silenced. Not in it. They're not euthanized. They're fine.
That would have been a bit too ruthless for my liking, I have to say. But going back to, Rooney basically fouling with impunity, telling the referee to fuck off at one stage and not picking up that booking that he should have got for that kind of dissent. So it's going to be, I think that's going to be another one where the interpretation of it is going to be fairly fast and loose. The differences between how referees perceive those incidents is going to be, I think, a Premier League talking point.
Yeah, I actually saw a little compilation put together, well, it won't surprise you, by a Manchester City fan of the various things that Rooney got away with in that derby. Quite extraordinary, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Just kicking out at people. He had a little altercation with Guardiola at one point.
Yeah.
He's got free reign, hasn't he?
Yeah, he does. Just a big fat cunt going around doing what he likes and nobody ever stops him. It's about time someone just fucking put him in his place. Like, nobody will. What's going on? Why is Wayne Rooney so special? What, you look at what Sam Allardyce said. Well, who am I to tell Wayne Rooney where to play? Well, you're the fucking England manager. That's who you are. He's not. What's he going to do to you? Does Rooney have, like, some kind of mob-based control over everybody in the world of football that he's somehow not accountable for anything that he does?
It feels
what
like it.
What is it?
I don't know. It feels like it at times. They do say down the years that England captains specifically have benefited, don't they, from refereeing? I mean, remember Alan Shearer just stamping on someone's head and pretty much getting away with it. Flying elbows that he used to execute without too many repercussions. So maybe that has an influence, but I don't know. It was strange on Saturday, certainly, to see him running amok quite so freely.
Yes.
I'm just trying to think, anything else from the Premier League? I mean, Leicester don't quite look the force of last season, do they?
No.
No great surprise there, I suppose.
No. I wonder, are there a few regrets among that Leicester squad?
Perchance. We'll see how they get on in the Champions League. I think the table looks sort of curiously familiar. I mean, if you look at the top six now, just four games into the season, it is Manchester City, Chelsea, Manchester United, Tottenham, Liverpool and Arsenal.
Well, there you go. There you go.
That's happened rather quickly, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. It's beginning to take a little bit of shape, of course. The gap between us and City, but it is still very early days, of course. Only four games. So I won't get too freaked out about it just yet. But, you know, at least we're moving in the right direction. Is what you would say. So two wins on the trot, and we'll see what tomorrow night brings. We might discuss tomorrow night a little bit in part two when we take your questions right after this.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star.
Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/arsblog.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two where we answer the questions you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog. But the show this week is very kindly sponsored by Cornerstone. Now, if you are looking for a shave that is not shonky in any way, I can guarantee you Cornerstone make fantastic German precision engineered razor blades that do not leave your face all shonked in little bits or wherever it is you might want to shave. Shave your chest. Did you ever shave your chest, Jen?
I never have done, actually.
Right.
Have you?
No. No.
I think, I'm scared of the chest stubble.
But that it might be all itchy and scratchy.
But I imagine it wouldn't be if I used a Cornerstone razor. Am I right?
Absolutely, because you could apply some soothing balm afterwards, because Cornerstone do all those kind of things as well, you see? Mm. So they deliver your razor blades, you get a brilliant razor, you get all the potions and lotions and everything else that you need, and you can get £10 off by signing up at cornerstone.co.uk/arsblog. That's cornerstone.co.uk/arsblog, and your discounts and everything else will be automatically applied, and it does help the podcast, so thank you very much indeed. Now, before we get on with the questions, did you happen to see or hear the interview with Francis Coquelin on TalkSport?
Oh, I don't think I have.
Okay. Here's just a little... This is the best bit from it. Okay. He's talking to Max Rushton and Barry Glendening. And here's Barry Glendening asking him a fairly simple question. Check out the answer. Okay, here we go.
Emmanuel, what's your favourite insect?
Antelope. Is that an insect? I don't know.
I don't.
Devastatingly, I can't hear that. You'll have to relay it to me.
Oh, no. Basically, he says to him, what's your favourite insect?
Yeah.
And there's a pause for a moment. Then he goes, antelope. Is that even an insect?
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. Antelope. What do we think he meant?
I don't know. An antelope?
An ant?
Maybe an ant.
It's such an odd complication. It's like when people's nicknames are longer than their first names.
Yeah.
To get from ant to antelope, how's he made that leap?
I remember my daughter once asking a question when she was young, which was, do ants have antlers?
Seems reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seems reasonable.
I told her they do, of course.
Yeah, she's terrified of them
now. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Huge ants. When you see some antlers on a wall, like in a like a hunter's treasure, I'd be like, oh, yeah, they're off ant.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, that's just that little distraction. Thank you to Francis Leach for pointing us in the direction of that one.
And Francis Coquelin for being quite so silly.
Francis Coquelin?
Oh, is that what you, is that not who answered the question?
No, it was Emmanuel Frimpong. Did I say Francis Coquelin?
I think you said Coquelin.
All right. Okay. Well, I've got this all completely wrong.
That's Francis Coquelin, but that makes even more sense now that it's Emmanuel Frimpong.
It is Emmanuel Frimpong.
Highly credible.
My apologies to Francis Coquelin. I've completely antelope'd that that whole segment there.
Don't worry about it. Shall we have a question?
Yeah, let's.
So, I'll start. This is from Neil Siglechner, who's at nsig_11, and he says, PSG, poor start in Liga. Injury crisis at the back. How confident are you of a win on Tuesday? And to put that in perspective, Matt Spiro says PSG must decide whether to risk bringing Thiago Silva back against Arsenal or play Thiago Motta at centre back. And young centre half Kimpembe may have to play as an auxiliary left back.
You know what? We've been in this situation loads and loads of times before, where you look
having a defensive injury crisis.
Yeah, well, we have, but also I think opposition as well, where we've looked at opposition back fours and said, "Wow, fuck." You know, we should be able to do something with that. The one that springs to mind last season was the game against Manchester United, and I think they played, was it Daley Blind and Michael Carrick? Were the central defenders at Old Trafford. They had a right back, was it Darmian? I can't remember which fucker it was, but he got a yellow card after about 6 minutes. And then on the left-hand side, they were playing somebody, and then they had to bring on that other guy who was really young and inexperienced as well. And you're thinking, well, look at what we've got. Look at the attacking talent we've got. So I tend not to put too much stock into personnel issues with the opposition, to be perfectly honest. Thiago Motta is a very experienced player. I'm sure he can do a job at centre-half. I mean, it's not ideal for PSG. It might, on some level, make things a little more easy for us. On the other, the team might then be set up more to protect the back four because it is a little bit weak. So I'm not really filled with any great confidence at the moment, generally speaking, because when we look at the Southampton game, when we look at some of the other performances over the last number of months going back into last season, you know, some of the issues that we had back then in terms of the football that we're playing remain. So I'd rather be a bit more convinced about our own football than the frailty of the opposition, if that makes any sense. Like, I don't feel especially confident. I think we could easily go there and get a good result because we've got lots of talent, but it will require us to play better than we did against Southampton, I think. So it's whether or not we can do that, and it all depends again on what sort of team he's going to pick. So.
Yeah, I would say I'm not massively confident. I mean, PSG haven't been brilliant in Ligue 1. I think they drew with Saint Etienne on Friday night. They've got a new manager who's, you know, not quite found out what he wants to do with the side, but he's been brought in specifically for Europe, basically. I mean, Unai Emery had amazing success with Sevilla, and they've brought him in to try and crack the Champions League, so this will be the real water test for him. I think this is a massive test for Arsenal too, playing the way we have. I mean, we can get excited about two consecutive wins, and we should celebrate that, but we've not yet played to anything like the level we would want to see. Do you know what I mean? I don't think the performances have quite clicked into gear, and that's putting it lightly. So to be facing a side of PSG's capability with a very good record against English teams, I think it's going to be very, very tricky, whoever they play at the back.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, look, while we're on the subject of PSG, Tanmay Jagdale, at Tanmay Jagdale, wants to know, what's your lineup for PSG? What team would you pick?
Well, I would go the same back four or five. So, Cech, Bellerin, Koscielny, Mustafi and Monreal.
Okay, let me stop you there, though, very quickly.
Go on.
Because Koscielny, as we know, has got a kick in the eye. His eye is swollen shut, according to the manager. As brave and all as he is, you know, you can't send him out there like a cyclops, only being able to see from one eye. Sure. So, if Koscielny is not fit, who do you bring in? Gabriella's back in training?
Yeah, is he close enough? I mean, if he was, I think that would be the obvious one. Do you know what? For as well as Rob Holding has done in those first three Premier League matches, I think I would be hesitant to throw him in. I mean, Kieran Gibbs is said to be back potentially. You've always got the option of playing Monreal as a centre-half and bringing Gibbs inside. If Gabriel could be available, I think I'd hurry him along and stick him in alongside Mustafi. What about yourself?
Yeah, I think you probably do, given the stage that it is. Have to err on the side of experience, which Gabriel has. If he's physically ready, I think I would still prefer to see Rob Holding rather than Nacho Monreal. If that's what the choice was, if it came down to that, I think I'd prefer Holding to Monreal just because of the positional structure it brings. You know, a natural centre half, and we're also keeping our best left back in his best position. I thought Monreal was very good against Southampton, particularly in the second half. He did a lot of good defensive work. So I'd like to see him there. So, yeah, it depends on Gabriel. If Gabriel is fit, I think he would probably get the nod. If not, then it's going to be Holding and Mustafi.
I mean, you can be sure they'll be doing absolutely everything they can to try and get Koscielny available and on that field, I imagine.
Oh, they'll be doing like they do in Rocky, in one of the Rocky films. Remember, he's getting bashed and he's the trainer's there and he's going, cut it open, cut it open. So Koscielny's on the training ground there going, cut it open, just bleed it out.
I think so. And then in midfield, well, we discussed this a bit earlier. It's very tricky. I think I would go for I nearly said it and then I wasn't sure. I think I would want to go Xhaka and Cazorla.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of me thinking maybe the physicality of an Elneny or a Coquelin might be helpful given that we're away from home. But, you know, it's a Champions League game. I think we've got to let go there and look to retain the ball when we have it. And those two are the best we have at that. Would you be the same or would you be
mixing up? Mean, just in terms of Cazorla doing another 90 minutes, I do wonder if he might look at Xhaka and Elneny.
Yeah,
I think, there's something about Elneny in the away European games that fits, you know, the fact that he's always available keeps things ticking a little bit in the centre of midfield there. So that wouldn't surprise me if he did that rather than Cazorla, gave Cazorla a bit of a rest ahead of what's coming this weekend. So,
yeah, that's a fair point.
I think Xhaka has to come in, yeah.
So ahead of them, I think, obviously, Mesut Ozil will play. And then I think that Alex Iwobi might well play.
Yeah.
He came on against Southampton. He's been injured, but he was a big part of Arsenal's plans at the back end of last season. And I think, as a rule, we look a better side with Iwobi in it.
Right. So where, making the assumption that Alexis is going to play.
Yeah.
And also making the assumption that I think Giroud is going to play. I think he's going to play him, you know, on home soil. I think there'll be something in Arsene Wenger's mind about that, particularly if Giroud is still a bit, you know, unhappy about the treatment he's got from some French fans. I think he'll back him to make a point up front. So if we're taking Iwobi and Alexis as our wide players, does Iwobi play left and Alexis from the right?
I think probably that way. That was how they lined up towards the end of last season, although Iwobi against Southampton did come on the right. I think he came on for Walcott and just played out on that flank. They're both versatile enough to mix it up and potentially change during a game, but I think those would be the two that I'd go for, and that's partly informed by the fact that I didn't think either Theo Walcott or Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain had a great game against Southampton at the weekend. So, and they bring a freshness to the side. So I think that would be my lineup.
Mm. Yeah, I wouldn't disagree too much with that, to be honest.
Do you think there's any chance, sorry to interrupt, but do you think there's any chance that he will not play Giroud and go back to Alexis up top? Do you think that's something that he might persist with?
No. No, I don't think so, to be honest. I think he's got Perez as a striker now. He's got a Giroud as a striker now.
Yeah.
And I think all the talk about Alexis as a striker was really only psychological talk because he had to play him there. He didn't really have anybody else for the start of the season. And I think that was why he was talking about his qualities there. I think if we've got nobody else, then he would use him there. But I think what he's going to do is look at Giroud and Perez as his two strikers. And I think we'll see Alexis primarily from the wide positions this season.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting because it'll be the first game in which he started in one of those wide positions. So interesting to see what side Wenger opts for, really, and how he looks to use him.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I think that could be the starting 11 there, and one you would probably fancy to do the job.
Team,
yeah,
definitely.
All right,
Aaron Ramsey, I guess only the sort of the major absentee. Let's have a chat. I mentioned him there. I feel like we mentioned him every week. But Mike L, who's because I'm Mike Larrier on Twitter, says...
Larrier.
Do we need to talk about Ox again? With Iwobi back and Perez an option, was the Southampton game his last chance?
I don't think it was his last chance, but I think what we've seen at the start of this season is, you know, with Alexis being used centrally, there's been more space on the flanks. I think he's had chances to really give the manager something to think about in the opening four games of the season. He was poor, really, against Southampton. You could see by his face when he came off.
He
absolutely knew it. He knows he's a guy who's really struggling to make an impact. I think he got like a little pat on the side of the face from Santi Cazorla as he was going off because, you know, they must know as well that this is a guy who's feeling it. You know, I don't doubt his commitment or his desire to do well, but you know, the way he's playing, it's just not working at the moment. And he can see that, and I think there are issues with confidence in his game. His face when he was coming off, I mean, he looked visibly upset because he's not playing well. And he's got that self-awareness, and I think we've spoken about it before in comments that Arsene Wenger made, that he tends to get a little bit too hypercritical too self-critical, and that affects his game. And I think you could see that against Southampton. And I think what's happened is that the opportunity he had in the opening games of the season to, I won't say establish himself, but to play so well that he's given Arsene Wenger a difficult decision to make, but that hasn't happened. Arsene Wenger doesn't have a difficult decision to make to leave Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain out of the starting 11. That's the reality of the situation that he's in. And you look at a new season, you look at it as a new slate, a chance to kind of start afresh and to really have a good go again, clean slate, all that kind of stuff, and it's the same as it was last season. And I think that's a real worry.
It is a worry, and to the question's point, do you think he's going to maybe find it a little bit harder to get first team opportunities now that we have a few more options available?
Yeah, I think he is. He is. He's going to find it difficult to get in on the left-hand side if Alexis and Iwobi are there. Theo Walcott, again, I mean, I didn't think he was that great against Southampton, but what's noticeable, I suppose, is that there is at least something different about the way Walcott is playing this season, that there is more commitment. There's a bit more willingness to get stuck in. There's more willingness to make tackles. There's more willingness to be involved. You know, it's not necessarily producing end product at this moment in time, but you can see that there is something different about what he's doing, whereas there isn't with Oxlade-Chamberlain. So, yeah, I mean, look, he's going to play probably in the Capital One Cup or the EFL Cup, I guess. That's another chance for him to play and to play well. But, you know, this is against a championship side without wanting to play down Nottingham Forest. He's had Premier League chances and he's not taking them. And I think, you know, ultimately the only decision the manager can make is to pick someone else who might play better than he is. And what it means, I mean, it's still early in the season, obviously, and there's a way to go. But it's very difficult not to be worried about his future and the way that he's progressing or failing to progress, despite the fact that he is being given chances. And I saw people over the weekend say, well, look, you know, what has Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain done that Joel Campbell hasn't? Joel Campbell did more and has done more over the last 12 months than Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain has, but only one of those guys is out on loan somewhere else.
Yeah,
so
I think it's difficult to argue with that, really. I mean, yeah. I think in terms of their performances for Arsenal, I think Campbell has been superior to Chamberlain. As we've said many times, it just seems that Arsenal has more faith in Chamberlain's potential, but there's only so long you can talk about potential before it becomes just an ethereal idea than something that's actually going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So there you go.
There you go. Okay, well, here's a question from Mark Blondal, at Mark Blondal. And he wants to know, why are we playing so effing slow this season? Not once have we maintained a decent pace.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it must be partly because just that sort of lack of cohesion that's sort of a consequence of... I mean, is it the case that Arsenal's teams do... Over the last few years, they have tended to start relatively slowly, and I mean that in every respect, because they take some time to find their rhythm, and we look at the moment like a team that doesn't necessarily know what our best 11 is, isn't able to field that best 11 on too many occasions, or hasn't been able to thus far. So it all feels quite tentative. It doesn't really feel like we've kicked into gear yet. But I mean, I say that it's not as if we were firing on all cylinders last season, blowing people away with the slickest passing football you've ever seen.
Yeah.
So maybe there's a bigger sort of systemic problem in place. What do you think?
It's a difficult one. I mean, some of it is down to the way the opposition play as well. that you can't really play at huge pace if you're trying to break down a pack defence. If they're sitting deep and you're trying to, you know, pick a way through, then it becomes pace is not really the thing that you need or that you can use. So I think that has an element to it as well. I thought perhaps there were in a couple of the goals that we've scored this season and a couple of the performances signs that we are willing to move the ball more quickly from deeper positions to help us use our pace. You think of Walcott against Watford, for example. Again, we're tying back into the passing of Granit Xhaka. But yeah, look, you can't play 100 miles an hour for 90 minutes. I just think that sometimes when the opportunities present themselves, we're very slow to transition, or too slow to transition from defence into attack. And again, it might be something that comes with time when the manager gets his midfield 100% sorted out. But yeah, I'd like to see us just a little bit quicker moving the ball from the back and maybe trying to find players in wide positions. But again, it depends on us being in those positions, you know, to stretch the defenses. So yeah, I mean, there is that whole thing of, you know, the first half tends to be a bit pedestrian at times, doesn't it? Yeah. And then as the momentum of the game changes, you know, we up it, you know, trying to find a goal and everything else. So yeah, I guess
it's difficult not to miss those the way we used to come out the traps, you know, a decade or so ago.
Yeah.
And blow teams away in the first 20 minutes. I mean, that's an alternative approach, but not one we're necessarily capable of on too many occasions.
Yeah. I mean, I do wonder, is that something a lot of teams do that we just don't? Or is it a consequence of the way that teams play these days that is becoming more and more difficult?
I think that's plausible.
Yeah, you know. But yeah, it would be great. Like, early goals are fantastic. A couple of early goals are really very welcome. Because they obviously set the tone of the game, and it means then that when you do go up, they've got to come out. It leaves space in behind, and then you can use your pace and use all that space on the pitch to cause them more damage. But yeah, I think it's such a multi-layered question. I'm sure Arsene Wenger would love for his teams to do exactly that, but it's. Yeah, whether it's down to our personnel, down to the way the opposition play, or a combination of all of them, not 100% sure. And I think when we talk about our football lacking cohesion and fluency, I think that's a factor as well.
Yeah,
is that we're still a little bit rudderless in terms of our attacking identity at the moment. So I'm curious to see if that corrects itself over the course of the next couple of months.
That would be good. That would be lovely.
Yeah.
Steve Moore, who's at SteveMoore416, asks of you, 2 bouts of illness, 2 Arsenal wins. Andrew, are you the new James? And are you happy to pay that price?
Am I the new James? Finally, I've discovered what my purpose is in life. After nearly 45 years, my identity is the new you.
Congratulations. I'm delighted to not be the old me anymore.
Would I sacrifice that for Arsenal wins? No. I'm sorry. I prefer to be well. But also, I don't think it's got anything to do with me. You know?
So selfish.
I know.
Attitude.
It really is. But hey, I would just prefer to be feeling okay.
So would I, Andrew, but I've been doing this for years. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. This is
sometimes we have to take a sacrifice for greater good.
Well, look, you know, maybe if that guy who made us count all the seals came along and offered me that deal, I'd think about it. But until such time, yeah. I'm gonna try and stay well and hope that somehow my health, my well-being is separate from 11 men in red and white playing football.
It's a radical idea.
Yeah. I'm just, you know, it's crazy, but maybe it's true. Maybe what they do has far more impact on the results than how ill I am. Something to consider.
I'm dubious about this whole thing, but we'll see.
All right. Nick Aylward wants to know, was Xhaka benched as punishment for his Swiss red card to try and curb his disciplinary problems?
I don't think so. The thought did cross my mind, but I don't really necessarily see how a red card on international duty would, if anything, I think Arsene would be pleased he played less minutes, to be honest.
Yeah.
And also, if you've got Granit Xhaka, you know he's going to get sent off a certain number of times in the season. I'd probably rather that one was with his with his country than with his club. Yeah. I don't think that that would have been a factor, no. But I obviously, I do think it's a bit like how you said earlier, we have to know that those penalty decisions for shirt pulling are going to go against us at some point. At some point, Granit Xhaka is going to be sent off in an Arsenal shirt. It's sort of a question of when. But I don't think that would have influenced his decision, do you?
No, I don't think so. I think it was probably more to do with how much he played over there and the fact that he played at the European Championships.
Yeah,
I don't think that, you know, that he would put too much stock into the red card at all.
No, surely not. Surely not. I think if you look at it, he's actually been pretty careful managing the players who have come back from the European Championships. I mean, Xhaka has not started too many games. Giroud hasn't started a game yet.
Yeah.
I suppose the exception is kind of Ozil, but then we're so
Koscielny.
Koscielny was brought back in obviously as soon as possible, but he didn't start that first game against Liverpool. We went with Holding and Chambers instead, which was showed a degree of conservatism. Ozil kind of the exception, I feel, in terms of the minutes he's played, but he's so important, as is Koscielny. So
yeah.
But where possible, Arsene's been quite sparing with them.
Yeah,
and that's hopefully. We'll kind of see the benefit of that later in the season.
All right. Your question.
It is my question. I should have had it lined up. I was so engrossed in thinking about Xhaka sending off.
Yes.
Okay. This is from Arsenal's Voice. And they ask, if one of our players had the ability to become invisible while he played for us, who would you pick and why? And no Theo Walcott jokes.
Ah, God damn it.
To become invisible.
I guess probably you'd have to say a forward of some description would be the best one, because the defender would have no idea where he was and he could just nip in, take the ball and score. So who would I like to see invisible? I mean, Alexis is an obvious candidate. Perez, I guess, an obvious candidate. But you see, would he be fully invisible, or would he be like the Invisible Man, where you would just see his, you know, his socks and his shirt running around with no head, you know, that way?
That's a very good question.
Because otherwise, he'd have to be nude.
I think he'd be invisible, but naked.
Right, so he'd have to take to the pitch in his kit, and then somehow, surreptitiously,
disrobe.
Could he be invisible before he's taken his gear off, or can he only go invisible after he's taken all his kit off?
I think he could go invisible before, but you would see the kit. He'd then have to discard the kit.
Right.
Somehow.
It would probably be against FIFA rules, to be honest.
I think it would, you know. I think it would.
I'm not sure of the real benefits of this.
All right, we won't do it then. We won't do it.
I'm struggling to think that this is in any way beneficial to us. Because, like, what would happen? He's in the middle of trying to take all his clothes off and go invisible, and then I don't know. I don't know.
I think it's risky. I was going to say it might be fun if your goalkeeper was invisible, because the opposition would think they had an open goal. You know, and take a shot at it, and then it would sort of get diverted away, and it'd be no.
But it would be terrifying from a fan's point. It would be absolutely terrifying.
Can you imagine how stressful? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God! Open goal. Is he going to save it? I don't know. I don't even know where the fucking goalkeeper is. You know,
like Claudio Bravo.
Yeah.
Where's he gone?
All right. A couple of quick ones to finish off on. This one from Lewis Freeman at Lou Duck. Lou, I think it's Lou Do. I don't know. Is it C or? Lou Do 92, I guess. Yeah, for the rhyming thing. But he wants to know, do the yellow cards for clear cheating by tampering with the penalty spot seem lenient?
I think they're probably about right. I mean, most fouls are a clear cheat. I suppose it's kind of a professional foul, isn't it? There's a horrid cynicism to it. But I don't necessarily think you can start sending people off than that. I'd say yellow card's fair enough. What do you think?
It is, yeah. But maybe they could do something where, you know, if you're caught doing that, you can move the penalty closer. Would that be easier or more difficult for the forward?
I don't know if that's just narrowing the angle. Do you know what I mean? Like, making the goalkeeper... Maybe that's easier, yeah.
So you get another 2 yards or something.
Yeah. Why not? Yeah. That'd be intriguing. I mean, we're always... But you and me are always trying to come up with alternatives for penalties, aren't we? We've got something against them.
All right, well, final one then from Peter Brown at Paterbrune1. And he wants to know, as you were discussing implement Mustafi last week, what is your favourite kitchen implement?
Wow. I like whisks.
Yeah?
I like handheld mechanical whisks. You know, like
the one with the handle that goes...
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't know why. I always feel like it would be a good torture weapon. And that's my basic requirement for a... Don't ask me what I'm going to do with it, but let me tell you, it won't be pleasant.
The only thing I could think that it might be in any way painful is if you had a very, very hairy person and you whisked their hair.
Yeah, that like a sort of epilation technique.
Yeah.
That would be very painful.
So, yeah, I like whisks, but I prefer the kind of the handheld one, just the kind of whiskey whisk that you...
Okay.
Like that one. But, you know...
Not an electric one, or...?
No.
None of this fancy modern nonsense.
Yeah, exactly. I have to say I'm a, you know, big fan of the spatula.
Sure. Aren't we all?
Yeah. I mean, life would be quite difficult without the spatula. But my favorite thing in the kitchen is a mortar and pestle.
Ooh,
I've got
very
a
satisfying.
Big heavy cast iron one that you can just grind up spices and stuff like that when you're making food. I like that. I like the sound of it. I like crunching stuff with a big heavy thing. I like that.
Yeah, and it releases smells and that. It's a pleasant experience all round.
Yeah, yeah. So there you go.
Yeah, good to know. I mean, you know, so Christmas is only a few months away now. I've seen my first Christmas ad, guys, so...
Oh, no, really?
The pestle and mortar will be arriving at you on December 25th. Yeah, I have seen a Christmas ad. I can't remember what it was for, but I think that's a record. September the 12th we are now.
Mother
crazy.
Fucking cunts.
I know. Yeah. Tell me about it.
Okay, well, look, we'll think about Christmas closer to the time, I reckon.
Yeah, we'll shelve that one for
Yeah, me. Just for now. All right, well, look, let's keep fingers crossed we get the right result against PSG tomorrow night. We'll discuss that on Friday's Arscast. Who are we playing at the weekend?
Hull away, I believe.
Oh, wow, that's difficult. Because, they're riding high.
Well, they're level on points with us, no less.
Yeah, so they've started their season pretty well, but obviously a game that you would fancy us to win, so we'll discuss that game. I'll look ahead to that game on Friday's Arscast, and we'll be here next Monday with another Arscast Extra. So until then, thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.